Welcome back. This is 20VC with me, Harry Stebbings. Now, I'm not sure about you, but I was probably the biggest fan of Wunderlist for many years, and I've now become the biggest user of Pitch. And so I couldn't be more excited today to welcome Christian Reber to the hot seat. Christian is the founder and CEO at Pitch, the collaborative presentation software for modern teams. To date, Christian has raised over $52 million for Pitch from some of the very best in the business, including Index with Sarah Cannon, who made the intro today, Thrive, Blue Yard, and then some amazing individuals, including Instagram's Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger, Zoom's Eric Yuan, Datadog's Olivier Pomerol, and Tiny's Andrew Wilkinson. Prior to Pitch, Christian was the founder at Wunderlist, raising $35 million from the likes of Sequoia and Atomico, before being acquired by Microsoft. I'd also though want to say a huge thank you to Adam Renklint and Frank Thelen for some amazing question suggestions today. They really did make such a difference. But before we dive into the show today, I have to say I just love using AngelList's fund admin platform to manage my investments. The team and the platform at AngelList takes care of all my back office needs so that I can focus on working with great founders. Leading fund managers have made over 10,000 investments into 6,000 startups via AngelList, all online and all in one place. And with recently announced rolling funds, you can easily find and invest in these top fund managers on angellist.com/rolling. And speaking of incredible products there like AngelList fund admin platform, you have to check out Letter, the beautifully designed banking experience made for high net worth individuals. They always go the extra mile, providing you with more than you expect. Multiple physical cards, multiple checking accounts, seamless wires, virtual cards, and so much more. Plus, with none of the BS fees that we all hate so much but have become so used to. If all that wasn't enough though, every time you use your Letter card, they automatically give a tax-deductible donation to the charity of your choice. So to experience the future of banking, head over to letter.co to find out more and join their waitlist. And finally, did you know there will be 1.4 million job openings for developers in 2020? Well, that's where my friends at Terminal come in. Terminal helps fast-growing companies build remote, high-performing tech teams by connecting you with elite global talent and owning end-to-end processes from hiring to onboarding to remote teams integration. Terminal delivers the product-building powerhouse your business needs to grow. From workspaces to community to on-the-ground support, they take the guesswork out of remote management so that you can really thrive. But don't take my word for it. Just ask high-growth businesses like Gusto, Chime, Earnin, and Hims, all trusting Terminal with their remote teams, and you can find out more today at www.terminal.io. But enough of me, so now I'm very, very excited to hand over to Christian Reber, founder and CEO at Pitch.
3, 2, 1, 0. You have now arrived at your destination.
Christian, it is such a joy to have you on the show today. I've heard so many good things from our wonderful dear friend Sarah Cannon and then Neil Reimer at Index. So thank you so much for joining me today, Christian.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Listen, I feel a bit of a fanboy moment here, having been such a Wunderlist user for many years. But I do want to start today with a little bit on you. So tell me, how did you make your way into the world of startups? And how did you most recently come to found the game changer that makes even like terrible PowerPoint users like me great at PowerPoints with Pitch?
Yeah, so I accidentally started a company when I moved to Berlin at the age of 18. I'm a programmer myself, and YouTube at that time had no playlist. So I had the idea, like, why don't I build online music player that uses YouTube API as a backend to curate music and charts. So I built a simple website, called it Mucelli, put it online on Mucelli.com. People could listen to like Korean charts, Japanese charts, German charts. I launched it. It got super viral. Free music on the internet, right? People, I think I had like 200,000 users within a month. And then I was like so scared of getting sued, because for me that was just a tech experiment, like a programmer experiment. And I asked my mother to borrow me money to start a legal entity or form a legal entity around it, just to avoid having to file personal bankruptcy in case of lawyers suing me. Started a company. 1 or 2 months later, an investor approached me, said like, hey, do you want to take money for this thing? And I was just really honest. Honestly, like, I don't even know if this is a company. I just built a playlist feature for YouTube. I don't think this is a thing, but why don't you want to buy it? So I sold the company, I think 4 or 5 months later. And it was right enough money to like buy my first car and start my next company, which was an agency business. So I built websites and products for all kinds of like small and large companies in Berlin for 3 years, where I met most of my co-founders these days, doing like those agency days. We had a blast. And then after 3 years of agency life, we almost went bankrupt because all our clients went bankrupt at the same time, couldn't pay the bills. And I was like, damn, running an agency is so hard and so exhausting and risky. Why don't I go back to where I came from, just writing software? I was fascinated with software as a service, so building cool products that you can launch for free with a freemium model, and then people can come in, use them, try them, and subscribe to them to use them. And my idea was, why don't I build the next generation project management tool? And I started Wunderlist. And my first angel investor said, like, before you start with this project management thing, why don't you build an appetizer product? Like, it's a really simple tool that gives you like credibility in front of investors to raise funding. I said, like, yeah, what should I build? Well, maybe I build a to-do app. So I wrote Wunderlist myself with two of my first engineers within 6 weeks or so, launched it for Mac and Windows, and it was an insane hit. It just went through the roof, and I didn't know what was happening. And then the App Store launched, we put it on the App Store. It was like super popular there, most downloaded app worldwide for quite some time. Fascinating experience. Then I launched mobile apps, built a team around it, turned it into a typical venture-backed startup. And then I sold it 5 years later to Microsoft. And at that time, my wife and I were expecting our first kid. So I was really ready to end this kind of startup roller coaster, or at least give it a break. So I spent 2 years at Microsoft. I don't know, I just never felt like I'm finished with what I really wanted to accomplish, which is building an independent and global software company that really cares about well-crafted and well-designed products. So I was looking into all sorts of different product categories and noticed that presentations are really ready for a overhaul. I felt like, hey, creating decks in PowerPoint is so tedious, so time-consuming, so complicated. I've never built a deck myself without the help of a designer. And then distributing is painful, converting it to like PDF format, caring about fonts, publishing it on SlideShare. I felt like this is all so weird. And I came up with the idea of Pitch, like the all-in-one presentation platform. And now we're here. That's my story.
As I said, I am the worst PowerPoint builder, and now I'm actually very, very proficient in terms of Pitch. I do have to unpack some elements there. And I'm actually going to take it chronologically, otherwise my aging brain will forget. You said about kind of the first project being like a feature, and like, is it a company? And it, as you said, it was playlist for YouTube. Often investors tell founders, oh, I think it's a feature and not a product. How do you feel when you hear that? And how do you think about that feature versus product, and what determines the two?
Oh, that is such a tricky question. I think my programmer background really helps me there, because I learned the hard way that every line of code I write will be overwritten by another engineer at some point. Like, even the products that I create might not exist at some point in time. So like Wunderlist is a very good example, right? After selling it 3 years later, it doesn't exist anymore. Nothing is forever. And I think that's how I approach product design and product development in general. I try to really like mentor my team in that way. Like, we need to think fast, react fast, and like always be open for new ideas. In terms of figuring out whether something is a feature or a full-blown product, that is a really tough thing. And what I have developed, I think, is just a way to trust my instinct. I'm not a very analytical person. Like, I didn't do a lot of research before I started Pitch. I just felt, I think this product needs to exist, and I don't understand why it doesn't. I'm just going to do this. I think it's a massive market. It has growth built in, because every presentation is meant to be shared with someone else. So if I'm able to build this tool and a platform around it, I think this can be a multi-billion dollar business. So I got started. When I'm looking at investments as like angel investments, I ask myself that every single time I look at something, I only trust my instinct. Do I get along with the founder? Do I believe the founder understands the market? I don't necessarily have to understand the product. For me, just I need to feel it, I think, in order to make an investment.
I'm totally with you in terms of needing to feel it. The only trouble is I actually have to write investment memos, and saying I feel it isn't quite as compelling for our investment committee. Okay, next chronological thing is, you mentioned they're selling to Microsoft. Do you regret selling?
No, I don't. I know I've created quite some buzz around wanting to buy it back. What really happened there, and I think I've never really told the true story in public, is I got really sick when I sold Wunderlist. Like, I was physically ill and I didn't know what was happening. I really was shocked by it myself, but I basically got rich by selling Wunderlist, got my first child, and then I got a really bad diagnosis of just being being ill, and I'm good today. During the time I've sold Wunderlist, I felt deep regret. I didn't want to sell it to Microsoft because I really, truly believed I could turn this into a massive company. Now, years later, I can reflect on it, and I can honestly say it was the right moment in time. I think Evernote hasn't worked out. Evernote was kind of the poster child at the time for like productivity apps. Again, I have also trusted my instinct in like the selling process. I felt like this is a good opportunity. I should probably do this. I had a few years to recover and like regain energy. So I am actually incredibly thankful to Microsoft for giving me this opportunity. Am I satisfied about the outcome? Clearly not. I think Microsoft has screwed up multiple acquisitions like Yammer or Skype, and they promised me when we sold it that they will try their very best not to screw up Wunderlist. And I think they did. I think we could have turned it into something much bigger and better. That's why I started Superlist last year together with the ex-Wunderlist crew. I mean, I'm not building the company actively myself. I'm just on the board and an investor, basically. But I think Wunderlist had a very unique character and could have grown to hundreds of millions of users and could have had a successful business product. So I believe the acquisition didn't work out, but that's totally fine. I'm not mad about it.
Listen, I totally get you. And I saw about Superlist and I thought, you know, Europe now has an Elon Musk, which is quite cool.
Yeah, someone called me the Jack Dorsey of productivity lately, and I thought like that maybe makes sense.
I would totally take that. That's a great compliment. Okay, next one is like, you know, with the sale, you suddenly are able to angel invest and you suddenly have more personal wealth than you had before. One that I love to ask on the show, and I think about a lot personally, is like, how do you think about your relationship to money and how has it changed over time from when you were borrowing money from your mother to set up the legal entity to angel investing today?
Yeah, it has changed quite a lot. I think I went through some kind of depression after selling my business to Microsoft because I didn't want that really. And I've never celebrated the exit. I've never hosted a party with the Wunderlist crew. It just was a really weird time. I wasn't happy about it. What money gave me was freedom. I could do whatever the hell I wanted. Through time and overcoming like that kind of like frustration, I've realized freedom is amazing. Money doesn't buy you happiness. Money buys you freedom. I'm the luckiest guy on the planet, I feel like. We still live in the same house as we have before the exit. I don't own like 10 supercars or something like that. So I don't think my life could be any better because I have like a wonderful family. I'm living the dream. I can work on whatever I want. And I think that is awesome. If I would gain more wealth, I would just reinvest it faster. I've taken 50% of my personal wealth and reinvested it into venture capital by investing into funds and startups. I love our ecosystem, right? That's kind of why it grows so fast. And that's my relationship with money.
I'm totally with you in terms of loving the ecosystem. Kind of unpacking two elements there is like often people say it's incredible for founders to angel invest. They gain different perspective, lessons. Others say it's a distraction. How do you think about the benefits or drawbacks of like being a founder of two companies at the same time and angel investing? What are the pros and cons in your mind?
So angel investing absolutely is a distraction. I think if you as a founder like run your own like seed fund and raise capital on the side while you are building your own product and business, I think it's a massive distraction. I wouldn't recommend that. What I am doing is I invest 4 to 5 times a year, mostly in people I kind of already know. The Superlist thing was really just pure passion. I started that company because I really believed this product should exist and the team was already in place. So I think if you balance it out, it's okay. I spend an hour a week, I would say, on angel investments, maybe 1 to 2 hours a week on Superlist, and the rest of my time is pitch nonstop. Before I started Superlist, talk to my board, try to make sure like I'm not gonna build this product myself. I will give feedback on like product design and who we should hire, what we should build, but that's about it. The team has the responsibility to create that company. I am just like the chairman or whatever. So I think there are a lot of founders who do this for like fame or personal wealth. I think if you commit yourself to something, starting a company, you should commit your entire life to it. It's okay if you do a few things on the side. That's how the ecosystem works, but there needs to be a clear limit on how much time you spend on angel investments.
I totally agree, especially also when you bring in outside capital. So totally with you there. You mentioned the word ecosystem a couple of times there. You know, you've seen both European and US investors. You've seen two different ecosystems. How do you think about the two differing ecosystems and what do you think are the biggest differences, so to speak?
I had a meeting with like a really influential billionaire investor in 2013, and I've asked him, why don't you really invest more in Europe and why don't you have a team in Europe? Europe. He took a napkin and he wrote down US, China, Europe. For US, he drew a circle. For China, he drew an even bigger circle to like illustrate the market cap of tech combined of all companies. And for Europe, he drew a dot. And he said, like, this is Europe. That's why we don't have a team there. Just to explain you the situation. Now, 7-8 years later, I think that has totally changed. So we have multiple decacorns. I think 4 in Berlin right now. We have tons of unicorns. I think the startup industry is growing like wildfire right now. Everyone wants to start businesses. So I think that is absolutely incredible. We're still behind in terms of the size of the ecosystem. So the amount of companies, the amount of talent, like the amount of people that work in startups, etc. But it's clearly on the rise. I think it's our duty now. Our generation has to create that industry. Otherwise, the generations after us will really struggle, like especially in Germany with the car industry. If that might be gone at some point, I think the tech industry will take over and it will be the backing bone of Germany in the future.
Listen, I agree in terms of it being our responsibility, and I hope for Germany's case the car industry isn't over. but I do have to ask you, speaking of like fundraising and investors there, and you said about your angel investing, on the other side of the table, I think a really interesting element, bluntly, is like you raised quite a lot of cash pre-launch with Pitch. Mm-hmm. What was the strategy on the pre-launch fundraise, and why did you think that was optimal?
The true story there is we've never wanted to raise any funding. I've made like really bizarre experience with investors in the past, and I was really anti-VC when I started my own company. I kind of said, I'm going to fund this myself. I'm going to build this my way. No board meetings, nothing. And we started Pitch that way. The first fund that made us an offer that I just couldn't believe. I think the seed valuation was 20 million with nothing, no co-founders, no deck, just the idea. And I was like, holy shit, this is insane. Okay, I'm going to take this offer. I think this makes sense. So that's how the fundraising has started. And then 3 months later, Index Ventures wanted to chat with me, Sarah Kenna, in fact, and Neil. I just told them what I'm working on. I just said like, hey, I'm going to build this like Pitch platform and we'll have real-time data integrations and its own distribution platform built in. I really think this can be big. And they loved the idea and asked me, would you raise funding? I said, not really, because I just closed the seed round. I don't really have the need. And then again, they made me an offer I couldn't resist. And then I took it again and I've noticed, okay, I can really accelerate the development. So I've scaled the team, hired a lot of engineers to build V1. And the next funding round, by the way, happened exactly the same way. We weren't fundraising. An investor of Wunderlist was just reaching out, wanted to hear about Pitch. I pitched the idea, got a really good offer. We raised 50 million in total exactly that way by not fundraising. But the money we kind of need, if you think about it, we have to build the next generation of PowerPoint, which is hard on its own. But then we kind of integrate something like DocSend and SlideShare right into the product. So we built multiple products all at the same time. We built a developer platform into the product as well. So you can build plugins for Pitch. Doing all these things is a big engineering effort. So we are currently 100 people, and I want to scale the company to 160, 170 people by the end of this year. And that just requires cash.
It totally does require cash. I guess one thing that I have to ask is, you said there are about 100 to 160, 175. Often in startup land, like that hustle culture and the, you know, work 20 hours a day is kind of idolized. I've heard from some of your investors you have a different take. So I'd love to hear, how do you think about kind of scaling culture within Pitch and what you kind of want to imbue within the team?
Yeah, I think that all goes back to my Wunderlist days. I had the exact same belief that you need to kill yourself to build a business successfully, especially a startup with like that's permanently under-resourced. Getting sick from it, like truly burning out from it, made me realize that obviously this is not sustainable. And I think I've learned to emotionally disconnect from what I'm creating. So I'm like trying to view building a business more as a project. So I don't get too attached. I work 10 hours a day or something like that, roughly. So it's a lot, but it's not too crazy. I eat breakfast with my kids. I eat dinner with my kids. I do that every single day. I play games like Minecraft with my kids. I just want to have a good life. And I'm not really sure if I have a detailed philosophy there, but I just want to find a way to sustainably build a business. And I also want to be a role model for our employees. So I think where I'm trying to build a culture where we are a bunch of like very ambitious individuals, but we also have a good time. It's the journey really that is the most fun and not like the potential exit you might have at some point.
So I I love the values you said there about, you know, breakfast and dinner with your kids, playing Minecraft. Mm-hmm. How do you imbue that with your team, though? Because, you know, you may do that and you may say that, but how do you create that culture with the team where they know that that's acceptable and great and welcomed as part of being a team member at Pitch?
I think if you're the CEO, everyone kind of looks up to you. Your team members can smell and see if you're killing yourself and if you are just working in an unsustainable fashion. Most founders I know, and like most first-time founders, are like really emotional weirdos, I would say, including myself. And I think you just have to find a balance and be a role model. I don't really communicate anything special. I just try to say that I want to provide an environment where people have autonomy, can do their best work, can also take care of their families. I think we have done a pretty good job during COVID, like helping our team in the right way. We've given parents the option to just work less during lockdowns to be able to somehow manage their lives with children. There's nothing special I'm doing. I'm just trying to be a normal human being.
Kanaj, you mentioned the kind of identity earlier, and I think identity and tying your identity to your company is such a dangerous but common thing. Like, you know, I hate going, fun fact, I hate going on holiday, because when you go on holiday, mm-hmm. You don't have your company, obviously, and then you don't really know who you are because mm-hmm. you are your company. How do you deal with tying your own identity to your company? And I guess now you said you like to have that kind of slight chasm between the two. How do you create that?
I don't, is the honest answer. So at Pitch, we're 8 founders in total. I think every new hire asks me the same question, like, how do you create culture? The answer is we just don't. It just happens. We hire good folks that we feel like fit our company DNA, like understand the product we want to build and have a similar way of working.
It's more a case of like with Wonderlist, when you sold it, obviously, and the depression, mm-hmm. it's like selling a part of you. And then with Pitch, you said that it's actually more like a project where you're just, you have that disintermediation.
It's just, I'm just trying to emotionally protect myself. So I, like I said, when I sold Wonderlist, it felt like I'm selling my child to the enemy. I didn't want to get bought by Microsoft. I viewed Microsoft as the enemy, and it was just stupid. It made no sense. In order to avoid that from happening again, I just tried to emotionally distance myself from what I'm doing to not burn myself out. That doesn't mean that I don't love what I'm doing. I clearly have a strong passion about Pitch and what we create and create well-designed tools. I just want to avoid this from happening again. Like, it's a way to protect myself.
Listen, I totally agree. I think I need to learn from you in that respect. You said kind of there about doing things you love. And, you know, as I said, I spoke to many of your investors before, and all of them said about kind of bluntly your product genius, which don't blush, but like your insight, especially around kind of product design and creation. It made me think, like, when you think about the craft of product design in particular and product creation, how do you think about that gut feeling, that instinct driven nature that you have, combined with the new world of granular, metricized, scientific approach to every product iteration? How do you balance the two?
What I mean by instinct, I don't think you get born and just have a good instinct. I think if you are building software like I am, you have to spend an enormous amount of time with software and hardware of all kinds. Like, I'm a nerd, right? I play most computer games. I know most tools. I use Windows, Mac, Chrome OS, Android, iOS. I know everything in tech. I have the latest gadgets all the time. I'm a super nerd. So I think I developed over time a pretty good sense for how software is evolving, how hardware is evolving. And I think as a founder, I'm just trying to identify an upcoming trend, like the rewrite of the Office suite, for example, and therefore the opportunity to reinvent PowerPoint and to really build the next generation of it. In terms of building a product, I don't think I'm a genius at all. All I provide is the idea. I approached my co-founders by just saying, like, hey, I have this idea of building a team first presentation tool, and I've pitched them the product. They fell in love with it. But then we worked with our designers to build a great interface, and we just worked on it really, really hard. I constantly have moments where I feel like we're just not good enough. We're not good enough in, I don't know, certain features we're building or branding or copywriting or whatever. And I think I'm giving my team a very hard time. I want to publicly apologize for that to everyone who's listening from Pitch and Superlist. I think I'm giving everyone a really hard time because I guess I am a perfectionist. I assume that's what my investors think of me as well, as I'm just not giving up. I'm always trying to build the best possible product I can. And that leads to what it leads to.
Can I ask, you said there about kind of investors, and final one before the quick fire, but it's like board management, and you said there about like no one's like born as a product genius, but like board management is the same. Fucking hard. No one knows how to do it when they start. When you look at how you manage your board today, how do you manage your board? And is it different from the first time with Wunderlist?
It is definitely different because as a first-time founder, you have no idea what you're doing. You're really learning with every board meeting, every product launch, every iteration. So I do board meetings every 3 months and I'm just trying to have a good time and explain everyone exactly what I'm planning to do on the product side, tech side, business side, marketing side. And that works really well. I had a really interesting board meeting at Wunderlist actually. So I had a pretty spectacular board. I've partnered with firms like Atomico and Sequoia and Early Bird, a local fund in Germany. And we were working on the next iteration with real-time synchronization. So like seeing your lists and tasks in real time while someone else is typing. I really believed that real-time synchronization in software is the future of productivity apps. And I've pitched my board the latest version and one of my board members pretended to fall asleep. So laid down in the board meeting and I was like, hey, are you sick, man? Are you not doing well? He stood up and said to me like, yeah, I'm not doing well because of you, man. Like what you are selling here is nonsense. It makes absolutely no sense. Promoting real-time synchronization to your customers is like promoting breathing air to humans. It just makes no sense. And I was mentally destroyed. My confidence was at an all-time low. And yeah, we had a pretty bizarre board meeting. And it turned out that it was the best release we've ever had. And it actually, in the end, it was the reason Microsoft bought us because of the real-time synchronization we've had. It was an absolutely fascinating thing. Like if you think about team-first productivity software, everyone is having real-time synchronization these days. It's an absolute standard. I think at that time, I kind of learned that again, like I want to have a good time with my board. So I'm trying to partner with people that appreciate product thinking. And you can make mistakes as founders like all the time. But just because you get feedback from an like successful investor doesn't mean that the investor is necessarily right. I think you can still learn from your investors. I think the unique advantage is investors just see a ton of different companies. They recognize patterns, which you don't as a founder. And I think if you build a good relationship with your board and you kind of try to learn from them, you are set for success.
I think it's also the way you probably relay the information. Lying on the floor and pretending to be asleep is a rough way to do it. That's a little bit harsh. I do want to move into my favorite though, Christian, which is a quick fire round. So I say a short statement and then you hit me with your immediate thoughts. Are you ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so what's the favorite book and why? What must we be reading?
As a kid, I picked up this like cheesy business book. It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm born in East Germany with like normal background, like working class family, right? And in my youth, my parents were working for really rich family from Ireland. I met that family constantly. I've spent time with them. Like, because I was a nerd, I basically fixed their computers when I was young. I found that book in their home, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I read it. For me, it was like my biography when I was like 14 or so. It was about a kid with poor parents who got told like you have to study hard to get a great job, which had a friend with rich parents who constantly told his kids you have to be smarter than everyone, to like you have to make people work for you. And I was like, huh, interesting. And it had a lot of good wisdom in it, like work to learn, not to earn, was a really good quote from the book. It kind of teach me that at the beginning of my career I shouldn't care about money at all. I should just try to absorb as much as I can as fast as I can, and I've just lived by it. Later on, I've realized that it's kind of like a cheesy marketing book or whatever. influenced my childhood so hard. It was phenomenal.
It's amazing to hear. And at least when you write your book, you can now have some cheesy inspiration. Tell me, what's the hardest element of your role with Pitch today?
I think the hardest aspect of being a CEO is often feeling lonely with the toughest decisions you have to make. I think I have phenomenal co-founders who really have my back at any time, and I have theirs. But yeah, some of the hardest and toughest and most critical decisions you have to do as the CEO, because it's your responsibility. And I think that is the most challenging aspect of that.
How do you deal with the loneliness? It's something that I've struggled with.
Building relationships with other CEOs, very, very helpful, because every founder feels the same. I think the best founders are really good at making unpopular decisions, right? When no one believes in you, you make a decision that you trust is the right one. And that is, I think, where you feel the most vulnerable and lonely as a founder. I get a lot of support from just friends who build companies. My angel investors who are all in the same kind of mode and who live very similar lives. So I think that helps. But now, wait, we have Clubhouse now. So now we can all socialize and feel less lonely.
This is totally true. You're right. I look forward to doing a Clubhouse with you. Tell me, what three traits do you most want your children to adopt?
Great question. I think I want my kids just to be happy, nothing else. I don't want them to become the next generation of tech founders, or like, I just want them to figure out their own careers. Whatever they want to do, I want to support them. I was lucky that my parents teach me to never be scared. That is, I think, the number one skill that my mother taught me. I'm just like insanely naive. I think I can build whatever I want and whatever I can dream of. And I think if my kids could adopt that from either myself or my wife or their grandparents, I think that would be the best skill I could forward to them.
Are you not scared of risk?
Not really. I trust science. I think most startups fail. Pitch could certainly fail as well. That's just the reality. And if you view everything you're working on that way, it just makes life a lot easier and you are able to make risky decisions a lot easier. But at Wunderlist, I had a lot of moments where I felt lonely, I felt scared. But I don't really mean it like I don't experience fear. But my parents were just really good at kind of like teaching me to trust myself. So I'm not even sure if they actively did something to create that. But I feel like my mother had a lot of influence on me in that one.
It was the book. It was Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Probably. I don't want to thank my parents. I just want to thank the author.
Just want to thank the book. You're driving sales through the roof today. Tell me, penultimate one, okay, is best board member you've worked with and why?
Oh, that's such an unfair question, right? One I really love working with is Kieran O'Leary. He's the founder of Blue Yard Capital in Berlin, and he was previously at Early Bird, who was invested in Wunderlist. We work together on so many things. He's a close friend. I'm also an investor in Blue Yard. He's an amazing human being because he's speaking with me on the exact same level. We're just two friends who try to do cool stuff together. He's on the investor side, I'm on the founder side, so I think it's totally fair to mention him. That said, I respect all of my investors.
Do you know why? I ask many CEOs and all the board members get very upset, so you are indeed shit. But final one, Christian, is like, when you think about the next 5 years, what do the next 5 years hold for you and for Pitch? Like, just how big could this be? And are we unbundling slides? Are we unbundling G Drive? Help me out.
I think Pitch has the opportunity to become a massive company. And I don't really want to just bring up numbers, but I think the reason I've started this is because I've realized that most major economic decisions and political decisions are based on the output of presentation software. If you get your morning briefing as a CEO, you often get like marketing reports, executive reports of some kind. You can, of course, get like memos as well, but I think decks play a substantial role in like informing leaders in our world. So I think if I build the right tools that enables the next generation of leaders to build the best decks possible and 10 times faster than ever before, I accelerate humanity. That's honestly my belief. And I think all of us, students in universities, founders, executives, small companies, medium-sized companies, big companies, everyone works with presentations. I agree that presentations like kind of got a bad rep in the last years, but I want to fix that. I think the next 5 years I will spend on building the product that I'm envisioning and my co-founders are envisioning, and that's about it. And I hope by doing that, we create one of the most successful businesses Europe has ever seen.
Christian, I've so enjoyed this one. This has been so much fun. So thank you so much for joining me, and I can't wait to see, what was it, the Jack Dorsey of productivity come to life in Europe.
Now I feel bad because I brought this in. Thank you so much, Harry. It was wonderful.
I mean, if you couldn't tell, I just absolutely love doing that one. And I think the thing that struck me is just what a brilliant and good person and leader Christian is. Such a joy to do that show. If you'd like to see more from us behind the scenes, you can on Instagram at hstebbings1996 with two Bs. However, before we leave you today, I have to say, I just love using AngelList's fund admin platform to manage my investments. The team and the platform at AngelList takes care of all my back office needs so that I can focus on working with great founders. Leading fund managers have made over 10,000 investments into 6,000 startups via AngelList, all online and all in one place. And with recently announced rolling funds, you can easily find and invest in these top fund managers on angellist.com/rolling. And speaking of incredible products there, like AngelList's fund admin platform, you have to check out Letter, the beautifully designed banking experience made for high net worth individuals. They always go the extra mile, providing you with more than you expect. Multiple physical cards, multiple checking accounts, seamless wires, virtual cards, and so much more. Plus, with none of the BS fees that we all hate so much but have become so used to. If all that wasn't enough though, every time you use your Letter card, they automatically give a tax-deductible donation to the charity of your choice. So to experience the future of banking, head over to letter.co to find out more and join their waitlist. And finally, did you know there will be 1.4 million job openings for developers in 2020? Well, that's where my friends at Terminal come in. Terminal helps fast-growing companies build remote, high-performing tech teams by connecting you with elite global talent and owning end-to-end processes from hiring to onboarding to remote teams integration. Terminal delivers the product building powerhouse your business needs to grow. From workspaces to community to on-the-ground support, they take the guesswork out of remote management so that you can really thrive. But don't take my word for it. Just ask high-growth businesses like Gusto, Chime, Earnin, and Hims, all trusting Terminal with their remote teams, and you can find out more today at www.terminal.io. As always, I so appreciate your support, and I can't wait to bring you an incredible episode this Thursday with four incredible guests, all either founders or leading VCs. It's a special one, so stay tuned.